If you felt like wearing a tutu, you'd wear a tutu. If you wanted to wear like a little suit, you'd wear a little suit. If you wanted to just wear a blanket, that's fine. I think that that kind of freedom that we have as children to explore identity and to just have fun with what we put on our bodies and how we bring our bodies into the world, that's the dream for me. Like, that's the gender future that I want to live in.
When I was growing up, I was always told that I was too much to handle. I was too loud, too opinionated, too demanding, just plain too much. Now, as an adult, I celebrate these qualities within myself and within the women I know. This is a call to action. This is a space to own your too muchness. This is too much to handle. I'm Hannah Cranston, the host of Too Much to Handle, where we talk about the amazing, the raw, the ugly, the painfully funny, and just plain real truth behind being a woman in your 20s and 30s. These are the conversations you're already having behind closed doors about everything from sex and dating, career pros and woes, to body issues. And we're just airing them. They might be too much to handle, but that's what we like. And today I am going to be way too much with Jacob Tobia, who is the author of the book Sissy, a coming of gender story, a trans activist, a writer, a producer, a performer, and a fellow dookie. Hey. Hi, Jacob.
Okay. I'm so excited to be too much with you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be too much with you. I know that some of the listeners cannot see how beautiful your book is, but it is stunning. Like, I've had the copy for a few weeks, but the hard copy making me a little.
And it's like, speaking of too much, I was just like, can one put too many pastels all together on a cover? Can you do too much glitter? Can it be too pink? And I was just like, nope.
I think not.
Nope.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I feel like I feel like, you know, I've spent a lot of my life being told that I'm too much and just learning to be like, no.
Or like embrace that and be like, F yeah, I am too much.
I'm gonna own it. So sorry, but also not at all.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I can't even tell you. I like could not control my enthusiasm about your book, which comes out March 5th for everybody listening.
Yes, pre-order today.
Yes, please do that. And before we get into the discussion, because this is literally my version of a book club, because I have like this, I wish you guys could see this. I have it like so many notes and dog-eared and highlighted, and I have like post-its sticking out. Ugh. Obviously the post-its are bright pink. But before we get to that and so much more, for everybody that's listening, please, please, please take a screenshot of yourself listening right now and be sure to tag me at Hannah Cranston and Jacob at Jacob Tobia so that we can reshare this on our story. And
if you want to use hashtag sissy the book, like feel free.
Please do that. Please, please do that. And also be sure to review this podcast if you have a minute, because it means so much to me and it's so important to the success of this show. And it's just life for me. So I will be reading, obviously, a review every week. So I want to read this review from VHKYDBNIDDG.
Yes.
Okay. And they said, recently found this podcast and have enjoyed a few episodes so far. Hearing the honest dialogue, below surface level topics, and thought-provoking discussions. Topics like masculinity, dominance, questions over assumptions, personal history, and others are much needed. Thank you. Oh, thank you guys for listening. It means so much to me. I read those words when I'm having bad days.
Oh yeah, I do the same thing. Like, I mean, it's a new thing for me because I've only gotten reviews like on the book very recently.
Yeah.
But I like go on like Shelf Awareness and just like read the little reviews and I'm like, yeah, okay, good.
That's
okay,
me. They're talking about me. Can we talk about some of the reviews for this? You have it on the back of the hard copy. Just read some of the names of the people who are giving rave reviews for your book right now.
I mean, like, okay, so honestly, the thing, like, I don't know how, I don't know like what I did in this world. Like, I don't know what deal I signed with, like, I don't know what witchy magic I put out into the world to like have all these people actually come back to me and like respond to the material.
Can I tell you what you did? You were you and you were honest and you were so flipping vulnerable and smart that is why they gave you good reviews. So don't say like, oh, like, I don't know what I did. Like, that is what you did.
I guess it's more, I can't believe it.
Yeah.
You know, no. Like I look at the back of my book and I pinch myself because yeah. It's like what I dreamed of my whole life. Okay. So I have on the back of the book, we have Billie Jean King. I'm obsessed with her.
Yeah.
Janet Mock.
Oh my gosh.
Monica Lewinsky. Garrett Conley, who's one of my favorite fellow memoirists. Miss J. Alexander.
Hell yeah.
Jesse Tyler Ferguson and Tyler Oakley. They all showed up. They all like,
It's a beautiful thing.
It takes a village. It really does. To like make a book a success and to like put something out into the world and to get your art seen and heard and read. It takes, you know, the support of so, so many people. And I think, you know, I'm just really grateful that artists like get that and support mm-hmm. each other. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Yeah, no, I mean, it really is a piece of art. I was telling you before we started this, I mean, this is not a short book. You put a lot of work into this and it's long. And I read it in 3 nights because I could not put it down. It is a piece of art. And not just because I know you, but because I kept forgetting that I knew you while reading. I was like, I felt like you were taking me on this journey. And I so enjoyed that part. But one of my favorite parts of the book is that it really challenges sort of the classical trans narrative. And that's something you talk about in the opening. And I just wanted to read a little excerpt, if you don't mind, if you'll
sure.
just story humor time. Me, where you talk about different aspects of the trans narrative, but I love this line. You say, perhaps the most exhausting thing about the classical trans narrative and the thing that most strongly violates my personal pet peeves is that it's not funny. Within the way that we are accustomed to talking about gender, there seems to be no place for humor. We have to take gender seriously because gender is not a laughing matter. You say that gender is not serious, or at least it shouldn't be. Taking our own gender or the gender of others too seriously results in a world where gender must be rigid, must adhere to consistent rules and regulations. This is detrimental to basically everyone because it stops us from having fun with our gender presentation and sense of self. I'm sure you did a much better job of reading that paragraph for your audiobook, but you know, like if you need me to like sub in at any point, like I'll take a celeb shot. But tell me what the classical narrative means to you. Tell me why humor is so important to you, because this book is fucking funny. Like it is fucking funny. So tell me why that was so important to you.
Well, I feel like some of that, you know, that quote kind of captures a little bit of it, but that's the essence of the thing to me, right? Like, sometimes I feel like we get caught as like, you know, progressive people. I feel like we get caught kind of being reactive to a bunch of other people's bullshit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when we're reactive, sometimes we forget to think about like, what is our actual vision for the world we want to live in? Mm. Not just like, how are we responding to like the bullshit that other people are putting out there and the hate that other people are putting out there? How do we think about proactively, what do we want the world to be? And for me, I have such a crystal clear vision of what gender looks like in my gender future, you know? And
what is that? Break it down for me.
It's like, I want every day of everyone's life to just feel like a dress up bin. You remember, remember when you played dress up as a kid and like how much fun you had with that? And you just got to experiment with shit whenever you wanted to. And like, if you felt like wearing a tutu, you'd wear a tutu. If you wanted to wear like a little suit, you'd wear a little suit. If you wanted to run around and like,
naked.
You know, naked, you could. If you wanted to just wear a blanket, that's fine. Like, you know, I think that kind of freedom that we have as children to explore identity and to just have fun with what we put on our bodies and how we bring our bodies into the world, that's the dream for me. Like, that's the gender future that I want to live in, is one where there's no pressure because, like, we don't have patriarchy anymore. We don't have the idea that, like, only certain genders matter. We don't have the idea that your gender must be one thing or another. We just have this kind of, like, open canvas where you can paint whatever you want to paint. You know, and for some people, that's going to be like wearing the same cute look every day. For some people, that's going to be like being comfortable in like sweatpants and a cute sweater. You know, and for some people, that's going to be like wearing the craziest gowns you can ever imagine. Mm-hmm. But I just want everyone to be able to play every day. You know, and that's what I mean when I say I don't want people to have to take gender seriously, because in a world where there isn't, you know, gender-based oppression, in a world where you know, we get the freedom that we deserve to be in our bodies and simply be comfortable, like then you wouldn't have to worry. There'd be nothing to sweat.
Yeah.
You know? And so I guess it's like, there's so much going on in terms of the trans community being under attack right now. Mm-hmm. There's so much going on in terms of, you know, like sexism and misogyny kind of rearing their ugly heads in different ways all throughout culture. And for me, it's like, I don't want, in responding to all of that, to forget like what my vision is, like where we're going. You know, you can't stop looking ahead on the road sometimes just because there's like a pothole. You got to see the pothole swerve, but then like you got to remember where you're going.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I love that. And I love your approach too in talking about sort of like breaking that mold of the narrative, because I do, you're right. Like it is sometimes it's so serious, which right. There's so many serious attacks on the trans community.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah.
But talking about it in a way that is so serious and oftentimes so tragic takes away from the enjoyment of just like stepping into yourself.
Right. And it's not as much, and it's not even that like one kind of storytelling is better than another. Yeah. It's just that anytime you as a person are told the proper way to tell your story and share your truth with the world is X, mm-hmm. we got a problem.
Yeah.
You know, like anytime that there is someone saying you must share yourself with the world in this specific way, like we're not living in a world with where people have freedom and where people have autonomy, you know?
Yeah.
And so for me, it's like, I just feel this pressure where if, you know, if you're going to talk about gender, you got to make it serious and you can't say fuck and you can't be a mess. And I honestly, I don't know how to not be a mess. Like it's just, I'm just a messy girl. That's just how I work. My gender's a mess. My identity's a mess. Like my closet is a mess right now, but it oscillates.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's something really radical and really powerful about being like, yes, I am a type of person that people are sort of learning to affirm in this world, but that doesn't mean I can't have fun along the way. And that doesn't mean that I don't have permission to be as silly as I want to be. There's freedom in humor and there's freedom in laughing at yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that was something that really stood out to me in reading this, is that there were moments where I felt sadness and I teared up, but there were most of the time I was like laughing and I was like giggling because you made it so funny and silly. It felt like you approached it in such a way that was just like deep, but all and serious and smart, but also silly at the same time. And I'm really glad that you brought up your closet because I'd love to talk about the metaphor of the closet and how you really challenge that, because I think this can resonate with a lot of people. I'm going to read another excerpt. You say, when you think about it, us queers are a lot like garden snails anyway. Okay, so you talk about essentially that the idea of the closet, you say you want to propose a more humane metaphor. You said, let's talk about us coming out of our shells. You say that you are garden snails anyway. You love flowers. We have beautiful curly shells. We are slimy and understand the power of proper lubrication.
I wrote that.
It's amazing. You say we leave a shiny, glittering trail wherever we go. And did you know that most snails are gender neutral and play both male and female roles in procreation? That many snails change gender multiple times throughout the course of their lives. Most important, when you fuck with a snail, when you make it feel like it's in danger, it'll go right back into its shell. It will protect itself. You'll no longer be able to see its gorgeous alien-like body, only a hard shell of its former self. So essentially, I won't read this entire book, even though I want to.
We're just doing audiobook too.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't really need you here. Could you please leave so that I could just read your book into this microphone?
I'll see myself out.
But I love it that you say, you know, with the closet, we act as if it's their responsibility to come out. But when a snail hides in its shell, we don't delegate responsibility the same way. A snail only hides in its shell because the world outside feels hostile. If a snail recoils at the sight of you, it's not because the snail is cowardly or lying or deviant or withholding. It's because you've scared it, which is so powerful and such a shift in the metaphor that, like, for me, even being as progressive as I am and always trying to be as much of an ally as I can be, like, that just shifted my perspective so much. It's like, we make the world hostile. It's not, the onus shouldn't be on the LGBTQ+ community to quote unquote, come out of the closet, the onus should be on us to make a welcoming environment so that everybody feels free to be outside of their shell.
Right.
Or feel comfortable within their shell if they decide to stay in their shell, you know? And so I loved that. And I'm curious, in which ways do you think that, you know, cisgender people can be more welcoming, create a more welcoming environment?
Mm. Well, and you know, the thing I'll also say is it's not just on cis people, you know, like everyone can do better to create a more welcoming environment for all of us. You know, I think it's, yeah, it was funny because when I wrote that, like I was, a lot of the book is really the process of me working my own shit out, you know, like I had never really thought about the closet metaphor in quite such a way or realized the way that the idea of the closet had made me feel trapped as a person. And it had sort of compelled me to blame myself for not having enough courage. Right. Like on days when I'm on days when I feel like exhausted, because there are days where like being a gender weirdo and being a gender visionary, it gets exhausting. You know, there are days where you're tired of everyone staring at you. There are days where you just, and there are moments each day where, you know, sometimes I'm just like, I just want to go out of the house and get a goddamn burrito and not have to worry about anyone heckling me or not have to worry about even the thought of whether or not someone will. Right. Mm. And on those days I will, you know, like I'll just wear jeans and a t-shirt. You know, and it's not, and I think there was a period of time in my own life where I thought that's me not being brave. Right. That's me being fearful. That's me selling out my community or my own identity as if I lose all credibility the moment that I try to be safe. Right. Yeah. And it's like learning to claim what you need to be safe, learning to claim what you need to feel happy in this world, and learning to take care of yourself. Like those are all things that take bravery. It's not easy to take care of ourselves. It's not easy to admit that we deserve care, you know? So I feel like that was why I really wanted to spin a different possibility, you know, because it's not enough in my book. It's not enough. Well, in my book, both literally and metaphysically, it's not enough to just say, here's what's wrong with the way we talk about it. I want to always, in the same gesture as I say, here's what's wrong with how we talk about it, or here's a way in which how we talk about it is complicated. I want to always provide another idea, you know, and say, this may not be perfect, but it's definitely a step in the right direction. And that's where this garden snails metaphor came from. Cause I was like, what, you know, what is a better way to think about this as self-protection and self-preservation? And what is a way to structure this such that we make it clear that other people are creating a hostile environment? It's not us, you know?
Yeah.
And also that there's not anything inherent about that, right? Cause the metaphor of the closet, when we talk about being in the closet, it's like closets are just sort of in rooms. They're not a bad thing in and of themselves. They're just sort of there. So we don't get an origin story with the closet of like, where did it come from? Like, why were you shoved in a closet to begin with? You know, like who the hell put you there? Whereas with this snail metaphor, I just like it because it's like we're all born with the ability to protect ourselves when we feel threatened. And we all do when that happens. But anyway, to get to your question about, you know, how can people create a safer world? You know, in some ways it's really complicated and hard, and in other ways it's not at all, right? Even when I think about like, you know, about bathrooms, right? Like I think that we could just build them differently in a way that actually was comfortable for everybody, in a way that like wasn't weird, right? Have you ever been in one of those hotels that's like a fancy hotel that has, you'll just like go into the bathroom and it's just like a beautiful row of like lovely sinks, you know? And then there's like maybe a little powder area, like with a mirror for like, you know, touching up the face. And then, and then just like a bunch of gender neutral floor to ceiling doors where, you know, like there's a little room where you do your actual business. And then there's like the communal area where people wash their hands and primp and do their makeup or whatever. And like that's, and it's a very kind of open space other than the actual privacy of like where you're peeing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And like, it's not something so radically different from what we're used to.
Like, God forbid you have to wash your hands next to somebody. Right. Like, doesn't look like you.
Right. And it's also like, it's also, there's sort of this myth of, if we separate bathrooms on the basis of gender, that they're safer. And I'm like, no, no, no. The best way to make bathrooms safe is to not even have a door to like the bathroom itself, right? Like obviously have a door for like when you're peeing or pooping, yeah. right? Like, I mean,
whatever you're up
people
to.
People poop. One of my favorite moments. I didn't write about this in the book. I really should have. Every time I sit down to do an interview, I have another memory that I'm like, oh shit, that should have gone in the book. And I remember on this youth group retreat, because I used to do a bunch of church retreats and yeah. I write a lot about being a church kid in the book. We went on this service trip called Appalachia Service Project every year, where we'd go to like a lot of towns that, you know, were former coal mining towns that just where their economy is completely collapsed and the poverty rate is incredible. Mm-hmm. And we just helped do basic like home repair stuff. And we didn't really know what we were doing, but you had like, there were crew supervisors who like made sure that we weren't like fucking it up yeah, or whatever. Yeah. And one summer we were in the car and there was this kind of gullible dude in my youth group. And we all as a collective group managed to convince him, not that girls didn't poop, but that only one out of every five girls pooped. And he believed us. And then my friend Jamie, I will never forget this. She's in the car and she's like, yep, I'm the pooper. And he was like, wow. And he believed it for like, I think 2 whole weeks. Like we convinced
him. How old were you?
We were like in high school. And
too
I think
old.
He was like
too
late old. Middle school, but also just, you know, some people are so trusting and I don't want to stigmatize that. He just thought we were telling the
truth. No.
But that's a funny gender story. Anyway, but I guess, you know, the bottom line is it's like, what does it mean? The reality is that gender freedom, like trans people can't build it on our own, right? Like, and trans people aren't the only people who benefit, you know? Like, I think that like trans people are like, and in many ways, like, you know, like women too, like we're the canaries in the gender coal mine, you know, like, and if we're not doing well, no one's doing well. Right.
Yeah.
If the canary doesn't fly in and fly back out, like then the air is toxic for anyone who goes in there. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I think we all benefit from a more gender inclusive culture, but it's going to take all of us to build it.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, it's like, what if cisgender people were as vocal about the need for bathrooms to be safer for everybody as trans folks are.
Yes.
What if cisgender folks, and not even a what if, there are lots of cis people who are doing this, were just more insistent that like there's no right way for their child to perform their gender, right? Like, and it's not rocket science. You know, it's like if you have a little kid and your little kid is like, I want to wear a tutu, just like let them, you know? Like,
yeah.
Just let your little kid do that. It doesn't matter what gender they are. It doesn't matter what they are assigned at birth. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like you can let your kids steer the ship of their own gender, you know? And if that means your kid is like that kind of ridiculous kid in class who like wears really funny outfits every day, like that's great. They're going to be a wonderful artist, you know? And you can just embrace it now.
Yeah. Well, one of the moments that I went in your book where, I mean, talking about dressing up is when you talk about your Halloween costume.
Ugh.
I mean, that was one of the moments I was crying because you wanted to dress up as Pocahontas, all non-PC aspects of that aside.
Right, it was the 1990s, like
I dressed up as Pocahontas too. We've learned that's then not okay.
Yeah, like I was seven,
yeah.
You know, and the line I use in the book is like, I didn't know multiplication yet, so I had some things to work on. But like, obviously the point of that story is not, oh, like white people should dress up as native cultures that aren't theirs for Halloween. But the point was that I had a female role model. I had a woman that I looked up to because, you know, she was like, I still think she's like the most badass of the Disney princesses because she's like nature girl, you know, and I was nature girl. Mm. I was like, yes, I want to wear tutus when I'm in the house, but I also want to get like muddy and gross in the woods in my backyard, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, she talked to trees and like I also did sometimes. So like, you know, we had a lot of things in common. And yeah, like asking my mom to be a girl for Halloween was super scary. You know, it was like, because I knew even at the age of 6 or 7 that was a huge risk, right? Like I knew that wasn't something I was supposed to do, but I was like, let me walk out on this limb and let's see if it breaks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then it did, you know, and I had to, and it took a long time to learn to have the courage to walk out on limbs again.
Yeah. Ugh. I can only imagine. And I like, I will say, I agree with you that gender issues, like and fighting for equality for trans folk, for women is really important, right? Because it affects all. But reading this book, and correct me if I'm wrong, maybe this is like my own takeaway, but I felt like one, that this is a book that was so profound for any trans kid who is reading this, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, just mm-hmm. like to have a different story and to share your story and be so vulnerable in it was so profound and so impactful. And I think it's going to have a huge impact on every, you know, kid, young person, you know, adult, whomever.
Grandma.
Grandma who is struggling with this or even thriving in it, whatever it may be for them. I will say, though, that another part of it I felt like was directed at cisgender men.
Yeah.
And feeling their and challenging their masculinity. Break that down for me, because I thought there were so many aspects of it where I was like, this is written for cisgender men to challenge the confines that are put on them.
Right. Well, I think kind of one of the myths that we have as a culture is that masculinity as we've built it, mm-hmm. is good for men.
Mm-hmm.
That it, you know, and it's like, yeah. It's not always. And you know, and that's why sometimes I get really frustrated about kind of the online discourse around like toxic masculinity, mm-hmm. because I think sometimes people don't know how to acknowledge or misunderstand who we mean in terms of who it's toxic for. It's like, no, we don't just mean toxic for women. Mm-hmm. We mean toxic for the person holding it.
Yeah.
Right. Like I you know, I think that in general, we create so little cultural space for men to talk about what their experience with gender has been.
Yeah.
Right. And what are the ways in which they've been traumatized? What are the ways in which they've been stifled? What are the ways in which, you know, they've had their hearts broken as children? Because yeah. this stuff starts so early. And one thing, you know, I refuse to do is like no amount of trying to challenge patriarchy means that I ever have to look at a young boy being told that he can't cry and act as if that is somehow him getting privilege.
Yeah.
That's not getting privilege. That's being like conscripted into something that's so toxic and hurtful.
Yeah.
You know, like I think that's the myth. I don't want to say it's hard to figure out the language around it, but that's the problem.
Misrepresentation for me. Sometimes of talking about
about like masculinity and like male privileges. Mm-hmm. Because for me, the experience of being made into a man or being pressured to be a man mm-hmm. was just a cycle of abuse.
Yeah, you say on page 88, you say in my experience.
God, look at that.
Sorry, just gonna like totally fangirl.
Your Duke
up.
Is coming out.
Oh, that's funny. On page 88, you say, in my experience, the process of being masculinized, the process of becoming a man was based on three practices. Mm. The practice of violence, the endurance of physical pain, and the violation of consent. And, you know, you could first read that and be like, the violation of consent. Oh, that's they mean against women, right? Mm. But no, you mean against men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like what happens, I think and you know, again, I'm still sort of workshopping all the language on this, but what I feel happens in our culture is that men learn, like we internalize how to hurt each other and then spiral that out into the world. We're taught that we like, you know, I mean, I think back in middle school, and sort of some of what I talk about in that passage is like the kinds of games we would play that were just casual were so violent, mm-hmm. right? Like, and the whole thing was, you know, you're supposed to, you know, take your BB gun or whatever and point it at your friend and be like, hey, can I shoot you? And then you're just like, no, why the fuck would I want you to shoot me? Like, absolutely not. Like, no. And then they go, ha, and they do it anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was all about kind of that peer pressure to participate in that culture. And I just think that the people that hurts more than anyone else, well, not more than anyone else, the people that hurts first mm-hmm. is men. Right.
Yeah.
And then men, when you learn this cycle of abuse, then no wonder you become an abuser.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like, I want to end the cycle of abuse. And that starts, the only way you can end a cycle of abuse is by healing people.
Yeah.
It's the only way you can ever do it. And I think that men in our culture, I am not saying they're evil. I'm not saying that they're awful. I'm not saying that they're monsters. I'm saying that they're traumatized because I was put through some of that. And we got to talk about it, dude. You know what I mean? Like, and that's the other thing too about when I think about the way that you're supposed to tell your story as a trans person, you're supposed to tell your story as if it's only about you.
Mm.
And I don't know how to tell a story about my gender that isn't fundamentally about us, you know? And I refuse to leave men behind. I refuse to leave men behind for multiple reasons, right? Like, one is because I know the pressure. I've been there, bro. You know, like, I've been in that camp. And maybe I had a more intense experience with it than you did, but you had an intense experience, you know? And like, B, I'm really invested in helping men to heal from their trauma, because also, ultimately, I would love to, like, you know, have some, like, better partners to choose from. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, because I mean, I date mostly men. I mean, I date a little bit more broadly than that. Like, my people are like, define your sexuality. I'm like, girl, I don't know. It's complicated. You know, there's a lot of things that work for me. But like, but I just feel like in general, it would really open up the dating pool for me. If like, if men would deal with their shit, I would be like, this is so great. Like, we can have a lot better sex that way.
Same girl.
You know what I mean? Like, everyone would have better sex.
Every woman that is listening to this knows what you mean.
Right. Everyone has better sex when people deal with their trauma. You know what I mean? Like, dealing with your trauma helps every facet of your life. And I hope that, you know, I hope that men will really read this book and won't be scared off by the fact that the cover is fabulous, right? Because part of the point is like, why are you scared off because the cover is fabulous? Why can't you have a fabulous book in your life? You know, what about your childhood made you feel like you can't be fabulous ever, right? Like, why can't you enjoy glitter and sparkles and pink every now and then? You don't have to love it like forever, but like, even if you don't, it's not your daily thing. Like, you should at least be able to like, appreciate it. You know what I mean? So I hope that men will really read this book, and I hope it will really kind of be a call to action for a lot of dudes, you know, not just to like be better in an abstract sense, but to heal and to talk about their coming of gender story. Cause that's the other thing I really, when I talk about trans stories being held in a vacuum, we act like only trans people struggle with gender. And that could not be further from the truth. The reason why the title, I mean, the subtitle, one of the things that I had to talk to my publisher about, one of the things that we sort of debated, was they originally wanted to call it Sissy, My Coming of Gender Story. And I was like, I don't think I like that, because a coming of gender story, the implication of that A is that that it's only one of millions. You know, it's not the chair. It's not my chair. It's a chair. You know what I mean? Like, it's, and I think that that's what I hope people will really take away from it. Like, I hope that everyone who reads this book will walk away thinking like, wait, what the fuck do I know about my own gender? Mm. Oh shit. Like, what did I experience? What is my coming of gender story? You know, like how did I come of gender? And do I like everything that I learned in that process?
I wish people could see how like emphatically and seriously I'm like shaking my head to everything that you're saying right now. I'm like, yes, yes, exactly. No, I think that's a really great point. And I think so much of that healing is so important, right? Because trauma that's inflicted upon you is trauma, like, again, that you say it's cyclical. It's trauma that you inflict on others, right? So
hurt people hurt people.
Exactly. And so I do think it is so crucial that we find that healing and offer a space for that healing for men, for women, for everybody, right? And it's funny that we... I mean, not funny, I guess it's an interesting dichotomy that you present when talking about that like ultra masculine, because you did go to Duke and I went to Duke too, where ultra masculinity is the name of the game.
That's what everybody loves.
Yeah. You talk about Duke basketball, you talk about the boys club politics, you talk about frat culture in college. I mean, I've talked about it before, but I didn't even... Like, I obviously, I think in my core, I was always a feminist, but I didn't identify as a feminist until college because it felt so, like, it felt so needed.
Felt necessary.
Yeah, felt necessary. Yeah. 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 And I think, and I'll say this, like, I don't, obviously, I have this quote that I'm going to read in a second, but I will share an anecdote where I can distinctly remember the first time that I saw you at Duke.
And really?
This, yeah, I can. So we graduated the same year and we didn't know each other. We had a lot of mutual friends, but we didn't know each other.
We like saw each other around.
Yeah, yeah. And so I can distinctly remember you walking on that walk. Now I'm going to forget what it's called.
The outside. Plaza?
Yeah, yes. So I distinctly remember, and I feel like, and after reading this book, it was like, oh, like part of your... journey was also necessary to happen at Duke too. I feel like you talk about getting so you know, frustrated and fed up and like going to the dollar store, which I love. And you're like, and I bought lipstick and I bought nail polish.
It was walking distance. Yeah. You know, I didn't have a car on campus. And like, that's where you could walk to if you wanted to get something real quick,
pretty
like
much.
In a fit of rage.
Yeah, pretty much. We've all been there.
Yeah, it's like, I don't even think there was a CVS. Like there was just, I think there was just the dollar store.
Was there not a CVS?
There was somewhere, but it wasn't like walking distance.
You had to drive, yeah. But yeah, so I do feel like sometimes your identity becomes clearer and bolstered mm-hmm. when you're in a situation where it becomes necessary.
Right.
Do you know? And so you say this, and this like really hit me. And I think it's going to really impact our listeners. It says, looking back at me in the mirror, you're talking about right after you put lipstick on and painted your nails. You say, I saw something I could never unsee. An image that would both support me and haunt me in the years to come. I saw myself. Truly and deeply, I saw myself. So for me reading that, I at first was like, wow, what a beautiful story, right? Mm-hmm. What a beautiful line and you know, Bildungsroman, you know, if you will, to get real dookie on you.
Yeah.
But then I had a moment of like, sadness and questioning and thinking about, wait, what is that for me?
Mm.
What is that? Not to turn this about me, but do you know what I mean? Like that feeling of like, wait, when do I look in the mirror where I truly feel like myself, where I truly feel like I am seeing my insides, you know, or my most like authentic being. And I couldn't think of when that feels right to me.
Mm.
And so you're right that I do think this book is amazing for everybody. Cause I was like, wait, what is my like true identity? How can I like come out of my shell? Obviously, because I'm a cisgender, like heterosexual white female, like the coming out of my shell is going to be a lot easier. You know
well,
what
yeah.
I mean?
I mean, like,
but also
like,
what does
easier,
that mean to
like,
me?
Maybe relatively, but like interpersonally, like no one's journey is easy.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, I think it's really important to separate like that, like the people's material realities can be really different, but internally, like journeys are journeys.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like then that's okay to hold.
Yeah.
Like I don't want to diminish anyone's journey with their gender. No one has an easy journey with their gender. Everyone takes time to figure it out.
And I think that's an interesting point too, because I think like as a cisgender female, like I'm like, oh, well, like I'm a cisgender female. Like, this is what I can wear and this is what I do. Like, oh, like the road is already there for me. It's already quote unquote paved.
Mm.
And I think for so many people who feel like they like fit enough within their gender roles, they're like, oh, like I don't need to think about it.
Right.
Right. But I think this book challenges that and makes you think about it. It makes you question, wait, what do I truly believe? What do I truly feel in my body? And when do I truly feel like myself? And I think that's what's so powerful about it. Cause I was like, oh shit. Like, I don't know what my gender means to me, like in my core, you know? And like, that's some shit I need to work through. But this book really like brought that up,
you know? Wow. That's like a dream. That's like, that's like a song to my ears. That's like, that's everything I wanted when I wrote this.
No.
That's everything I wanted when I wrote this. I wanted people to like be able to sit with their gender in their own heart in a new way, you know, and through sort of having fresh eyes on a different perspective, kind of come to different realizations or ask themselves questions that perhaps we haven't asked in a while, you know?
Yeah.
But it's funny that you say that, you know, because the idea that like, oh, cis womanhood is this comfortable place. I mean, it's like, no, it's not.
No, yeah.
But, and the idea that that's somehow a simple identity. That's the other thing that I really, when it comes to sort of the traditional narrative that we have and, you know, the people who build the traditional narrative are mostly like not even trans, right? Like people who build this sort of traditional narrative are the curators of media and culture, which are like still mostly like cisgender white dudes, which again, that's even an oversimplification.
Yeah.
But the idea that cis people somehow have a simple relationship to gender, it's like, girl, please. You know, everyone, like, it's just, there's like the idea that cisgender people, by virtue of being, of understanding themselves as cis, that means that there's no complication there. It's like that, I mean, in my eyes, and this is, you know, this may be, I don't know if this is the exact right way to frame it, but I think there's something real true about this. like, in my eyes, the original trans activists were cis women. Or some of them were cis women. We don't really know historically who was what. But, like, when you think about, like, the suffragette movement, and when you think about, you know, about, like, the feminist movement and everything that it's done over the past century, like, it was a bunch of women getting together and saying, this binary is bullshit, this idea of this you know, prescriptive, limited idea of what womanhood is and what our bodies are allowed to be is bullshit. Like, we deserve to live in a world where we have as many possibilities as we want. We deserve to live in a world with agency, where we have the ability to wear a skirt if we want, to wear pants if we want, to be strong if we want, to, like, be dainty if we want. We deserve to choose whatever works for us. And that was like, you know, the feminist movement's been fighting that for generations already. And so much of the progress that we've made as a trans community, like, rests on you know, our trans elders, but also rests on feminist activists who have been challenging the gender binary for as long as trans people have. Mm. You know, and I just think there's such a beautiful synergy and overlap and connection between the ways that women have pushed back and said no to the gender binary and the ways that trans folks have done that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And at the crux and the pinnacle of that is trans women being like, no and no.
Yeah. Oh, that is so good. I hope people are, like, writing this stuff down. I realized in the middle of you talking about that, we didn't define cis. So
right.
I'm sure a lot of you listening know, but just in case you don't know, do you want to break that down real quick?
Yeah, sure. So it's real simple. It's funny. I have to tell you a story about defining cis in a second, but I'll do it first. So basically, if you're cisgender, it means that, you know, you identify with the sex and gender that you were assigned at birth, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, were born a female bodied person. You have an F on your birth certificate. Everyone assumed that you were a woman and you were like, cool, I'm a woman. That's great. You
right.
know, like, and, it, or you, you know, you were assigned male at birth and you, everyone assumed you were a man and you were like, yeah, that's cool. I'm a man and I'm male and that's great.
Yeah.
You know, perfect. It's sort of like, that's basically what being cis is. But that's not to say that within that experience, there isn't lots of gender complications mm-hmm. still.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so, but it's funny because my, there was a period when I was, when we were going through drafts on the book where my editor asked me to do the same thing in the manuscript. Mm. And I just, or she just noted, she didn't say I had to, but she was just like, hey, this is the first time I noticed this is the first time you use the word cisgender. Like, would you care to define it? Like, do you think you should? And I had this moment where I was like, nope. But not doing it. Don't need to. Like, I'm not, I don't want to. And I feel like that turns this into, like, a 101 thing
yeah.
that I'm not interested in. But I was like, but I will add a footnote that clarifies it perhaps a little bit.
Oh, your footnotes in this book are fire.
It's where I hide my snark and my silly.
Oh, it's so good.
But the footnote, it's honestly, I think it's probably the greatest sentence I've ever written in my entire career and may be the greatest sentence I ever write. Like, when I wrote, I was like, oh. And it's, you know, I have, like, a little some blah, 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 cisgender footnote. And then it says, the footnote is, if you don't know what cisgender means by now, it's probably because you are cisgender. Bless your heart.
Oh, I remember reading it. You guys, this book is so funny. Like, it's so powerful, but so funny at the same time. Like, that's such a, like, a prime line. Okay,
my goal,
so,
like, for the book in yeah. general is, like, if by the end of it, I want, like, your mascara to have run, like, don't wear waterproof when you read it. That's not dramatic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
wear, like, a really, like, wear, like, a non-waterproof, like, the cheapest mascara you can find. I want your mascara running just a little bit. And then my dream is that, like, every fourth or fifth reader will have to be like, oh, no, I have to change my underwear because I peed a little bit. That's my dream. That's my vision.
That's amazing. I will tell you, my mascara didn't run because I don't wear mascara because I have eyelash extensions, but because
yeah,
I cried.
Do.
Some of them came out, so you owe me like $15. I'm just saying.
Okay. You just send me a Venmo request.
Yeah, well
done. I'm not even kidding. That's legit femme expense.
That's like three lashes. Like, that's a lot of money.
That's
expensive. Let me just tell you.
Wait, we have to talk about those later. I feel like I should get some.
I'll give you the deets.
Yeah.
Yes. So I guess, like, in conclusion, because I, like, as much as I want to read every line of this book, like, you.
And we could talk forever.
I know, we really could. I want you to sell a lot of copies and I don't want to like give it away. So I want everybody to buy this book and read this book March 5th. But I do want kind of what we were getting at, like people who are listening, who trans or not, right? Mm. Like who want to find their true selves in the mirror and break free from whatever confines they may feel to figure out how to like walk through life and be their most honest and authentic self. Like how would you give them like a guide or a tip or some sort of like nugget of motivation to best do that, to best break the mold that's been like set upon them?
Well, okay. So I've like two pieces of advice. And also, you know, let me clarify that when I give advice, I'm not giving advice from the place of someone who's figured everything out. Mm. It's like I'm halfway through the hike and I'm like, well, I don't know actually what else is coming up, but like definitely there's some blueberries over there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like if you want a snack, like that's about what my advice means. Like take it as that with that level of depth, because I'm still figuring shit out myself. But, you know, I think part of it, and not to tie it back to the name of the podcast, but part of it is I would really challenge everyone out there on any kind of facet, if you've been told that something about you is too much, to really think about who told you that and why they told you that. Because almost always when someone tells you that you're too much, it's because they're trying to assert their own power. It's because they feel threatened by you. It's because they realize that you know your worth. It's because they realize that you're connecting with your power and who you are, and you're shaking shit up, and they're scared for what it means for their life. It's when they're saying, when they say you're too much, what they're really saying is I'm too little.
Ooh.
I'm not enough.
Guys, can we edit that out and put that in my promo for this entire podcast and for my life? I just want to replay that every morning when I wake up.
You know, like that's what they're really saying.
Oh,
so like whenever someone tells you you're too much, like really think about what they're saying and why they're saying it. Because odds are you are just enough, baby. So that's, I can end there. That's good.
When someone tells you they're too much, it's because they're too little. Oh.
You know?
That's like going on my phone background. That's my new mantra. Oh, damn. I'm going to steal it too.
Oh, feel free. Like, go ahead.
Damn, that is so,
my
so good.
My attorneys will reach out later. Oh. I'm just kidding.
Well, I'll have my people talk to your people. Just like eyelash. We'll like figure
it
out.
Yeah,
we'll figure it out. It'll all work itself out. Okay, I want to ask you five rapid fire questions for you that you can answer with one word or more.
Okay.
Not too much, too little. Okay, what's one thing you couldn't live without?
Ice cream.
Ooh, what drives you?
My car. Is that bad?
No, it's perfect. What keeps you positive?
Flowers.
Mm, what kind?
Like ones I see walking around.
Oh.
That's one thing I love about living in Los Angeles is that people like, the yards are so pretty.
Yeah.
And just like walking by and being like, oh my God, look at that succulent. It's so cute. That really gives me life. It really gives me life.
That's a beautiful thing. Finding that in the simple things is the key to happiness. What or who inspires you?
I'm just constantly and forever inspired by queer and trans history. Mm. So like my trans elders, you know, like people you should go look up on Wikipedia, like Marsha P. Johnson, Miss Major Griffin Gracie, Sylvia Rivera. Like there's just so many incredible folks. I mean, Joan of Arc, I consider her a trans elder. Like there's just so many incredible people. But yeah, the connection to history and to my elders is what.
Is there like a historical book that you would recommend to anybody who wants to delve deeper into that? I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. No, there's so many. One book that I read, and I don't know how it stands up, but I read it in high school and it really changed my, it just changed my world. It's a book called Making Gay History. Mm. And it's just oral histories from people who are like, and especially it covers people who like lived through the AIDS epidemic, and through, I mean, not that, you know, the AIDS epidemic is over, right, but lived through like the 1980s, like gay men specific, section of it. And that was really powerful for me. Yeah. And then, oh gosh, there's so many other ones, but I also think that just like reading Redefining Realness by Janet Mock, like, you know, there's just so much brilliant trans work out there. It's really hard to even name all of it.
Do you know that people are going to be saying your name now when people are asked that question?
That is
Should
something.
Should you just like take a moment to recognize that? Like people are going to be saying your name, your book when somebody asks them that. Just saying.
Just like
absorb that for a second.
Okay, I'm going to let it sink in. Yeah. I don't know how, but I'm going to try.
Yeah. Okay. And my last question is, what is your intention for today, tomorrow, or for your lifetime?
What is my intention? My intention is to shimmer, to refract as much light as I can.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I love that so much. Okay, Jacob,
it's secretly just really gay. By that I just mean wear a lot of sequins, but if you want to imply a metaphorical thing in there, like go ahead.
Oh my God, you're amazing. This has been, I totally fangirled out. But tell everybody where they can find you, where they can buy the book, when they can buy the book, break it all down for everybody.
Okay, so you can find me on social media at Jacob Tobiah. It's just my name everywhere because I just won the name lottery, I guess. Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff. And you can buy the book pretty much anywhere books are sold. If you can order it from your local bookstore, I will love you forever. But if you want to do something, you know, if you also want to buy it Barnes & Noble or Amazon or whatever, it's there too. And I would really encourage people, if you can, to pre-order it because I'm trying to get this on bestsellers list if we can. And the best way to do that is through pre-orders because pre-orders all get crunched into their first week of sales. So any pre-orders that come in plus your first week of sales is like how they calculate that.
So wait, how can they pre-order on Barnes & Noble, Amazon, that all goes into pre-ordering?
Yes. Okay, cool. And you can pre-order with a local bookstore. You can just call them and say, I want to put in a pre-order, and then you pay for it up front, and then you get it when it comes out. But it super helps me in terms of like, and helps, you know, like the whole, like, I mean, other queer and trans artists who are also trying to make it, that kind of stuff. You know, it takes a village, and the more we support each other and the more we get our work on the charts, the cuter world we'll build.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. Everybody do that because I will tell you, and I don't, you guys know me, like I don't bullshit. Like I could not put this book down. It was so good. I was like, oh, like, you know, like we'll see, you know, I'll just like skim and see what's going on. But I literally could not put it down.
So it's that awkward moment where you read a friend's book and you're like, I really hope I don't hate this. Yeah. Oh no.
I knew I wouldn't hate it. Obviously I knew I wouldn't hate it, but it is so, so good. And I just implore you all to read it as quickly as you can. Also, please, please, please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss a single episode. Also, please review this podcast if you have a moment. It means so much to me just to read and feel better about myself, but also it helps the life of this podcast. And I'm giving shout outs, so just like do it. Well, and just a reminder, we'll be coming at you every single Wednesday. So buckle up because it's going to be too much to handle. See you next week.